Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 8. This week, we heard Bob's conversation with journalist Jen Miller about her new podcast, Blood Will Tell. Jen and Bob's conversation was a good one and really brought up a lot of thoughts from our crew as well as our listeners. Today, we are sans Janet, but Bob and I are here to take a deep dive into this episode. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Yeah, I guess so. I was going to talk about it at the end, but I guess I might as well talk about it now. So this week, for those that are patrons have been listening to the pregame, you already know that I've got, and I think I talked a little bit on last week too, that's why we're recording this on Monday instead of our usual Tuesday night. I have an insane week. It's a good thing. School I teach at, our girls basketball team is on the road to a state championship, hopefully, fingers crossed. But also my advanced journalism team is filming a documentary about the girls basketball team, which means I have to be at every single game helping them film. We're running two cameras, you know, we're filming the whole thing. The point being, so we're filming this Monday. We got a game tomorrow night, Tuesday, that's an hour away. Wednesday, I have to go to Lansing, which is 2.5 hours away for a conference that I have to go to. Thursday, assuming we win tomorrow, we got to go back to Lansing for another one. And then Saturday, back to Lansing again. So it's just a crazy week. So I'm not going to tell you guys what it is just yet because I have a pretty good idea what I'm going to do. But the plan is it'll be a little different episode this week on Sunday. Probably they're the ones I'm thinking about are episodes that aired before, not on this feed, but on another feed that are very relevant to what we've been talking about. But I'm going to give you guys two episodes this week to make up for the fact that you don't have a fresh one coming in because there's no way. I did have an interview set up tentatively for this weekend for a True Justice Warrior, super interesting case out of Australia. And then she realized that late last week, she's like, oh shit, this is South by Southwest week where she's going to be at for that. So we had to scrap that, not scrap it, but move it to next week. I talked about a little bit about last week, Zach. I talked to the director of the exoneration project at Notre Dame for that case that you sent me.
Yeah.
Had a Zoom with him and one of the student attorneys today. We're definitely doing, we have scheduled for next Monday, we're going to record that interview.
Awesome. That's going to be a good one, I think.
Yeah, it is. I had a really good conversation with them. And we had a long talk talking about maybe possibly working together on a case, that the students are working on.
That would be phenomenal. And that's almost the next evolution of Truth and Justice right now, right? Is getting in with another Innocence Project. We're in with Texas, but to get in with another Innocence Project would be huge, yeah. Or something along those lines.
Yeah. And we've worked with the Exoneration Project out of Illinois on Jamie's case. You know, we've had like, you know, our little slight connections, nothing like we had with the Innocence Project of Texas. But for those of you who don't know where we're at, we're in Michigan, but I'm literally 10 minutes from Notre Dame's campus. And that's what I was talking to them about, Professor Grulet, today. I was like, I'm right here. Like, I can go to it because I would love for season 19 to not only be, you know, obviously another long form case, but something that an Innocence Clinic is working on. But to where, like, I'm envisioning, and I've been wanting to do this for a long time, to be able to, like, integrate with them, like, literally, like, go down and have, like, some of, like, the student attorneys be part of the podcast process, you know?
That'd be amazing.
So we have another meeting scheduled for that, but we are going to interview about this recent exoneration that they got, and looking into the city of Elkhart is very similar to the city of Benton Harbor and the city of Gary, as far as the amount of corruption and things in those cases. So those two episodes are coming in the following weeks. But yeah, this weekend is going to be a little off. I just literally, once that interview fell through, there was no time. And now like the earliest I could record something would be Friday, and Friday is the last day Erica works. So then there's nobody to edit, and Saturday I'm gone. So you're going to have something. And the plan is I'm going to put out an episode on Sunday and an episode on Monday. You're going to get an episode each day coming up next week.
Double dose of truth and justice.
That's right. That is right. As far as this episode goes, other than that, there's no real housekeeping. I know everybody keeps asking about West Memphis 3. Your guess is as good as mine. We're still just waiting on results. We haven't got good results or bad results. We just haven't heard anything yet.
I'm going to step in for just a second. I know that you do this. I'm going to do this time. Listeners, we love you guys. We absolutely love you guys. We love the questions. We are not holding anything back from you. We appreciate the questions about West Memphis 3. We appreciate the questions about Sandy, Jamie, all of them. We're not holding anything back from you. As soon as we know, you guys will know.
Yeah. Well, with the caveat that sometimes you can't know, but that's not the case here.
True. True that.
Yeah. Here we're just everybody's just waiting. We're just waiting on that case. So no other housekeeping. Getting into this week's episode, this was an interesting one. We got a lot of feedback from it that I really want to spend some time addressing. One of our listeners, Tony, made some really good points. And there were some other people that kind of echoed those same thoughts. So we're gonna address all that. But first, I want to talk about just kind of our impressions of the show in general. Zach, now, Zach, you just listened to the first two episodes that were available.
I've only listened to the first two that are available on the podcast apps. I do not have Audible. I had Audible. It ran out. I know that it's all available on Audible. You can listen to the whole thing on Audible right now. I've only listened to the first two episodes. Listening to the first two episodes, really fascinating story. I love what Jen is doing. I think she's doing a really good job telling this story. You could see that she has a background in journalism when it comes through because of the nuances she puts into it and being mm-hmm. able to really twist a story and push this story forward. It's a really nice podcast, really well produced podcast. And the sound and the little bit of like ambient noise they put through the podcast is really good. I mean, it's a great podcast to listen to.
Yeah. And it was, so I'm sure you guys heard some of this in some of my questions about, you know, to Jen during the podcast. Like, for example, you heard me ask her, do you think this is a true crime podcast? I asked a little bit about the victim and I asked her if she thought the sentencing was what, and of course, a lot of people, if you don't have an Audible subscription, then you've only heard the first two episodes. So I don't want to, you know, spoil anything in that regard, because I was having this kind of almost like an ethical dilemma. Mm-hmm. With the podcast, as far as the podcast goes, I thought I stand by what I said. It was super intriguing. I binged it all in one, and this all happened very fast, by the way, because this wasn't one where, you know, I reached out to someone and said, hey, I want to. This was, they reached out to me and were like, hey, we have this new podcast coming out. I see you're doing interviews this season. Do you want to have Jen on? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we made that arrangement. They sent me the episodes on Friday, Saturday. I listened to all of them and then interviewed her Sunday. So it was like, boom, 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 boom. It happened really quickly. So there's like the part of me that was like, this is an incredibly well-produced podcast, incredibly well-written. I love the Shakespearean twist that she put on it, you know, that it was wonderful storytelling. Then there's like the other side of me that was like, from a true crime perspective, I have some concerns. And before instead of me just going on and on about that, we'll just go ahead and get right into.
The one thing I was going to say is I do feel like this is a really interesting podcast, but from my perspective, it's a very interesting human interest piece on these two brothers, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not what the consumers typically understand as true crime. And that's my opinion. I thought it was a great podcast, but we'll get into this. So we'll dive right in right now. So Tony brought up a really good point, has a really good question. And it's, who is the justice warrior in this episode? And from his perspective, this is a story about two brothers who have gone unpunished for several crimes and were, in his opinion, under sentence for the murder of Richard Phan.
So first thing I'll address is when I saw Tony's post about this, it was kind of a gut punch for me because I'm glad he pointed it out and called me on it. And I don't regret the interview. I don't regret listening to the podcast. I don't regret promoting the podcast. And we'll get into that in a minute. But what had not occurred to me is that, you know, we had just gone through this whole thing that we're naming this season justice warriors, because we're going to put up, you know, justice warriors, people doing that are doing good work and on real cases in the space. And when Tony put that up and I had to sit and think about it, it was like, how do I want to respond to this? Basically, what I came up with for me was, that's a fair point. It's a fair point, because, you know, I couldn't say who is the justice warrior who did, you know, who did something great for the criminal justice system. I don't think anybody did. I don't think that was Jen's intention. That's also not her job, right? She's not an investigator. She's not even a crime reporter. She's a journalist and a writer, and she was writing a story. It just, her story crossed over into the true crime realm. But yeah, she certainly didn't do anything, nor did the two men now that the story was about, the brothers. They didn't do anything great as far as justice. I love the, like you said, Zach, I love the fact that, you know, if you're following the human interest story of it, you don't know this, but when you get to the end, like, they really turned, you know, she does a really good job of laying out like their background and the cultural issues that they had, and then how they like pulled out of this when it was over and turned their lives around for them. And it's an amazing story. It really is. But to your point, Tony, on the, and by the way, Tony is the one, Tony made the first post about this. So we kind of were kind of letting Tony's post guide the conversation, but there were several listeners that had similar thoughts. But I want to acknowledge, you're right, to put this as a justice warrior in the season, it doesn't fit that. And it's not to make an excuse on my part, but also because, you know, I did figure that out on Saturday, but that part just kind of slipped my mind because it happened so, but, you know, I finished the last episode at 8 o'clock at night on Saturday and then recorded the interview on Sunday, you know, so it's not like I went into this looking for this big justice warrior, but the whole justice warrior concept kind of slipped my mind. I really just started kind of crafting my questions for the interview to draw out the information that I wanted to draw out. But I want to acknowledge that I think that's a fair point.
Teresa had a good, really good point. Teresa in the chat says, the podcast is exploring how people get into these situations and commit crimes is interesting. You know, it's more about, you know, how this situation happened, and where we typically lean into the victim side, the victim advocacy side of the whole podcast, mm-hmm. and which was lacking in this particular podcast, but I don't think that's what she set out to do. And that's
right.
You know, you have to take a step back. I know that's not necessarily what we do, but sometimes you do have to take a step back and kind of see that bigger picture of what that journalist was trying to put forth.
And there's also elements in there. We lose. So we are always try to be very victim centric. Even in our wrongful conviction cases we're working on, we want to really focus in on the victims. But at the same time, what do we also talk a lot about? You know, you've heard me talk, me, I won't say me. A lot about like our prison system. What is it supposed to be about? Is it supposed to be about punishment, or is it supposed to be about rehabilitation? And so this is a story of a successful rehabilitation, or at least seemingly so. And so that's why, you know, like I struggle with the, you know, the sentencing. Again, I don't want to give it away, but, you know, I agree. I think they were under sentenced for it. But then at the same time, you know, Jen's answer, to that question wasn't a bad answer, where she's like, you know, given, you know, their age at the time and the circumstances, she thinks that, you know, that it was appropriate. I don't know that if I 100% agree with that. Everything is a matter of opinion. But at the same time, if we're looking at, are these two brothers a threat to society still because of this, or throughout this process of, you know, the time in prison and the rehabilitation and how they've turned their lives around, the things they're doing with their lives now, is that supposed to be the goal of? So this is a very, very complex, layered, and it's like I spoke with Zach and Janet off air before we started. We were texting earlier. Janet couldn't be here today, by the way, guys. She's traveling. She was trying to make it and it just didn't work out, unfortunately, because she really wanted to be here for this too, to have this conversation. But, you know, I said, I think this will be a really interesting, good conversation, because there are so many layers to this.
Moro Casino. American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. American Social Casino.
Download download the Moto Casino app today.
It's tax season, and by now, I know we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. Here's another one. One in four honest, hardworking, taxpaying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock's U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, backed by another good number, the Million Dollar Protection Package. In fact, restoration is guaranteed or your money back. Don't face identity theft and financial losses alone. There's strength in numbers with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection for tax season and beyond. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Well, I mean, if you just go right into the main story of it, it is wild to see essentially, I hate to call it a wrongful conviction, but a conviction of this circumstance because it is the wrong person. I mean, you know, you have these identical twins and the wrong person is picked out by witness, but there's also no way to really tell besides eyewitnesses. I mean, you have their stories, you have Trung's story and you have An's story about what happened. And they seem pretty candid about what happened. We can get into details later. And truly, I'm not there. You weren't there. We don't know what truly happened. We know what's on the record. We know what's in articles. We know what's on the podcast. But we do know that they were involved in this. But for the idea of the fact that they switched twins based on a complete eyewitness thing is really, I hate to say interesting or intriguing, but it's such a weird anomaly to see. And the fact that there's no way to do any DNA testing because it doesn't prove anything because clearly one of them did it, but they have the same DNA.
Right. And there's a lot of elements to think about within the criminal, like, because there was, you know, missteps by the state, right? You don't put identical twins in the same lineup. That's ridiculous.
So can I ask you, is there any legal,
I don't know,
standing about that? Because while I feel like there is a moral and ethical problem with that, I also don't understand that there is not a legal, I mean, it seems like, why couldn't they do it legally?
Well, I think it's a matter, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it's addressed, you know, in some statute, but like Jen said, she was not able to find another case where it was done. And it's because I tend to think we didn't get all these details, you know, as far as like, you know, we don't have the case documents and stuff to see what happened.
Correct.
But the small sentence, I think probably has a lot to do with these missteps. I think that there's a good chance the state bungled this up so bad that they're like, if we take this to trial, like, we're going to be in trouble. So my guess is there was a plea deal that came down, and the state was probably in a position where they're like, we could go to trial and get nothing here because we had the wrong twin. There's two twins in the lineup. We locked the wrong person up.
Yeah.
You know, all it would take was for, you know, the other twin to come in and say, no, it wasn't him, it was me. And then, not that they would have, but they could have played that game, you know?
Right.
And really confused the jury. So, you know, I think they put themselves in by making that misstep. And also, Kathy in the chat said something, it's a cautionary tale. You touched on this too, Zach. And I also thought it was interesting to explore. Think back to like Jody's case, right? And Richard Perry, who we talked about in season 15, a lot of these cases, you know, where people get kind of trapped into these circumstances sometimes, right? And I'm not saying they were trapped, but there's extenuating circumstances isn't the right word, but there are real life situations and circumstances that lead to some of these outcomes. And so I think it was worth our time to hear the backstory and the cultural background as to how they ended up where they ended up with the gang affiliations and things like that, because it kind of helps understand, like, not all, and I don't know these guys from Adam, right? But so I don't know, maybe they are, but like, not all people who commit crimes are monsters. There's, you know, there are other reasons these things happen, and it sounds like I'm making excuses for what they did, you know, as far as the burglaries and everything else. I'm not, but it was just interesting to me to hear that side of a story because we don't usually hear that side of the story.
Yeah. You know, I do, while I agree with you, I do think it's really interesting to hear that side of the story. I do sometimes tend to feel like it is an excuse to be a product of your environment. Now, I do understand that these environments are extremely tough, especially cities like Benton Harbor, where our case was from, where Jody's case is from. You know, it's extremely, extremely tough environment to grow up in. But there are also so many people that grow up in that same environment that don't make these decisions. So that's not, I mean, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just feel like sometimes you have these people that say, it's the situation we're in. And while I do have some understanding of that, I also feel like, yeah, but there's a lot of people that come up in the same situation that don't commit a crime or don't. So, I mean, I'll go back to a personal level. We talked about, I can't remember what season it was. We talked about the Menendez brothers and we went through that whole thing. And I had a breakdown where I talked about that I was sexually abused. And I'm not committing these crimes, you know, you know, that was kind of the defense that they tried to put on with the Menendez brothers was these two were sexually abused and all this thing happened. And I said, well, you know, I feel for them and I understand that, you know, I'm not far off of that situation. How is that different? You know, I didn't do that. And there's so many other people that didn't do that. So while, you know, I want to understand their situation. Sometimes I do feel like there is a little bit of trying to excuse it, you know, and maybe that's not what it is. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I think it's interesting to understand what you can do. I don't know what you do with it.
Right.
But I just like, you know, human psychology is something that I'm fascinated by. So I'm always interested, especially when you see the outcome, like who they kind of have grown into and you try to like connect that dots. Like, how are these two that were doing all this stuff before? How are they? Completely different people now, you know, what's that origin story, for lack of a better term? But yeah, I think that when we look at this, there's an ethical lens to put on this. And I was struggling with it when I was doing the interview and I had more time. And also a lot of these times I know, but once we get through the interview, I know we're going to do this. I know we're going to have another episode to unpack it later and really think it through. But I think the cross section comes in from the fact that, in my opinion, and that's why I asked Jen the question, in my opinion, this wasn't really a true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. There was no mystery. We knew from Jump Street what happened, who did it, how it worked out. To me, it was a story about these two brothers. And I think that's where a lot of the conflict comes in, because it's very like how the audience that is presented to here is a true crime audience. And we have an amazing audience that is very victim focused and very victim centric. And so when you take what is a journalistic story that's being told in the way it was told, that also involves a crime and is presented to a very compassionate true crime audience, they're immediate. And to be honest with you, even though, you know, I know Jen got some pushback from our audience. I got some pushback from our audience. But truly, it makes me proud to know that, like, our audience was like, hey, wait a minute, what about the fucking victim?
Yes.
You know, that so many people, that jumped out to so many people. I think that's amazing.
I have to agree. And I am glad in the episode you asked Jen about the podcast, whether she believes it's true crime or not. Because once I said it earlier, I think it's a very phenomenal human interest piece. Mm-hmm. But I just think, for our listenership and for so many true crime listeners, it's not what they're expecting going into something like this. And I think, and I do agree. I wish that there would have been more weight put on the victim, and there just wasn't.
Yeah.
So Tony does go on to say that there are some major uncorrected lies within Blood Will Tell podcast, which he believes defames the victim. In the podcast, it stated that the victim, who we now know was Richard Phan, had hit a girl, but in reality, he was just trying to break up a fight. And this is from me adding on and not you. I did a lot of research this week from as much as I could find. There are several articles that kind of back this up, that there are witness statements that say that Richard Phan was just trying to get these people to leave, was trying to break up a fight. It's hard to say because, again, these are witness statements. I have not seen the actual court documents, but there's a lot of articles out there that kind of back this sentiment up that Tony's putting out.
Yeah, so I went through and did a bunch of reading too, and I found, kind of found the same thing. And what I found is what is consistently stated throughout the articles is, according to police, Richard Phan, who was 22 years old, was trying to break up a fight. He was a peacemaker. I read that it was a birthday party for his girlfriend, I think, and that the twins weren't even invited to the party, and that, you know, he was trying to break up a fight. And that's not the story that we heard in the podcast. So like Zach said, I don't know, like, cause I haven't seen, literally, I've just seen quotes, quote, according to police, he was trying to be a peacemaker.
So, and I saw one article that did have a quote from a witness that was a friend of Richard's. Again, that's a friend coming forward as a witness. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying we don't know. We just don't know.
Yeah. And I'm sure Jen, as from a journalist perspective, I'm sure that's a tight spot for her to be in too, because the way you'll typically report from a journalistic standpoint is you interview a witness. She interviews the twins. Mm-hmm. They tell her what's said. She lets them say what they say happened on the podcast. And then you then try to interview somebody from the other side to get another perspective. And in this case, nobody from the other side wanted to talk to her, understandably so, but she never had that. Now, you would think there would be, you know, police. I don't know how in depth the investigation, because again, her intent wasn't to investigate the crime. She told you right up front what happened with the crime. There was never, like I said in the podcast, I was several episodes in when I was like, I'm really enjoying this story. Mm-hmm. This is super interesting, but what am I, like, there's no mystery to be solved here.
Right.
Like, I already know what happened. So what am I, and then I kind of realized, like, oh, I had that epiphany moment where I was like, oh, this isn't a true crime story. This is a story about these brothers. And it kind of shifted my mindset into listening to the story about the brothers, which I found fascinating.
Yeah, I did too. And like you said, there is no secret. And I know that, like, I know we've kind of mentioned this already, but we've had several listeners kind of step up to the plate and kind of bring these, you know, these questions to us. And I, again, I think it's really good from our listeners that they're able to step up and talk to us and frame it in such a good way, you know, to show the integrity of our audience and really show what our audience has to offer and to put out there.
Yeah. I want to just make sure that I'm valid, that I'm not sitting here saying, no, you guys are wrong and this was great. I want to make sure to validate everybody's concerns, because I had them myself at the time, the more I've looked into it. And I also want to make clear, I'm also not saying that Jen did something wrong. Like, I think that she did what she set out to do, which was to tell this very interesting, unique human interest story. You know, I like I said, that the rub comes in when you present it to a very victim-focused true crime audience, this story. And I'm sure, like, and I don't know how this was received in the other, because it's presented by, you know, Wondery is distributing this. I think they're presenting it as a true crime podcast. So I'm curious what the feedback has been as this goes out to all these true crime audiences, because we are certainly not unique in the fact that our audience is very much focused on justice for victims. So I'm thinking I would imagine she's probably getting a similar kind of feedback, you know, from, I think it would have been better off to be presented as a human interest story.
Right. I have to agree. I have to agree wholeheartedly. And again, I don't think the whole true crime, I mean, we've talked about it almost ad nauseum at this point, but I don't think that was her intention at all. I think her intention was to tell the story of these two brothers and this complicated situation that these two brothers are in their relationship and how they got to this point, you know, because there is so much of their background that is damning for them to make them to this point. And I don't know, I did find it very interesting to listen to. I will say that much.
Yeah. And Lily points out in the chat, I think is a fair point. She says, it sounds like she didn't mention that article, that there were articles that said the victim was trying to break up a fight. And she feels like that's part of her responsibility in telling the story, because it is a story involving a crime. And I can't disagree with that, Lily. My only pushback on that would be, and this is a hypothetical what if, because I don't know. My only pushback on that would be is if she had access to court documents that showed that wasn't the case. Right. You know, if she had court documents from witnesses that were there that said this guy hit a girl, I don't know that that's true. I'm not even suggesting that's true. But that would, you know, in that case, then I could see why she wouldn't bring up it, because in that case, it would be her defaulting to what she believes is verified truth without any direct statement from anybody to counter it. So I don't know if that's the case.
No, that's a good point.
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Well, do you want to leave this conversation behind and kind of move into some of our other questions?
Yeah, I think we've only got one or two other ones, but I think we've kind of beat that conversation to death. But I promised Tony on the fan page that I would address his concerns. Like I said, there were several other people that had them too, and so I wanted to make sure that we had this discussion about it.
Well, from a listener standpoint, I understand where they're coming from, and I really do appreciate you addressing this because it does show that you understood what was happening too. You know, you weren't just putting content out to put content out. You did this interview and you had questions about it. And I think that shows a lot about you as a podcaster. And I'm happy to see that you're doing this and you're kind of putting it on your own self here. So thank you, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on. A different Tony asks, not the same Tony we've been talking about, a different Tony asks, if the two brothers would have remained silent, would it have been nearly impossible to convict either? It seems like there would have been a strong, reasonable doubt as to which brother did the stabbing. Even an eyewitness identified one of them as the culprit. I would think a defense attorney could cross-examine them about how they could tell the difference and keep that in doubt.
So I was thinking about this. My first thought is, all they had is witness statements. But then if you remember back, they did pretty much remain silent. And so one of them was getting locked up. So, gosh, I'm working off. I should have notes in front of me. It was Trung the first one that got arrested?
Trung was the first one that got arrested. Trung is the one,
right,
according to the podcast and according to Trung, that actually committed the act. And An is the one that was the bystander and helped hide, help discard the knife, whatever. So Trung is the one that originally is being charged. And then An is the one that is picked out of a lineup, even to the point that the witness that was picking out the lineup said, identified Trung first. And then when they bought Anan, said, oh, I got the wrong one. It's that one.
Yeah. And there was another flip flop then. Yeah. I'm trying to remember how. Anyway, it gets confusing with all the twins. But point being, neither of them in that process confessed anything. Right.
Correct.
And so one gets arrested and the other one's out. So that kind of, so to me, the answer to the question is that they did remain silent. The only thing that changed when one came forward was the one that was on the outside, then came in and admitted it wasn't him, it was me. And so that, of course, then moved him, you know, released his brother, and then he went in. But so prior to that, if they both remained silent, I think that what happened was the wrong brother would have just been convicted. Based on the, because he wasn't in there because of what he said. He was in there because of what the witnesses said. But also, and I touched on this a little bit, but I was dancing around it because of, you know, trying to avoid spoilers. There's more, like I said, there's more layers to this too, because the guilty brother is the one that stabbed the guy and killed him.
Correct.
Also, the other brother, the reason he was even involved was because the other brother had gotten into this fight. And the reason he had the knife is because the other brother had brought the knife to it. So it's like, I don't know, I struggled with that throughout. And as if you finish the whole thing, it was always, the whole time I was kind of like, yeah, I don't feel like one's innocent and the other's guilty. Like, I think they're both really, they're both responsible for this in a way.
Yeah, especially, I mean, you brought it up in the podcast and they touched on it right in one of the first two episodes. So I don't think we're spoiling anything, but the idea that, you know, An had the knife and Trung took it. You know, there's a lot going on there. To go with the listener's point, just in my idea is the fact that they didn't go to trial. Because they remained silent through this part. But I feel like, you know, if a defense attorney could have kind of tried to spin that, I don't know how effective it would have been. But the idea that I feel like a defense attorney could kind of try to spin that. Like, how do you know that this is the guy? How do you know it's not that guy? And in my opinion, I would, as a juror, I would like to think I could figure something out. But in my opinion, you'd go like, that's a good point. I don't know.
It's a risk. And I want to address here too, Garrett in the chat points out. So Tony had said that in the podcast, they said that Richard Vaughn had hit a girl. Truthfully, when I said that, I listened to it over a week ago. I don't remember that, but I wasn't paying that close of attention. Garrett just says that he, and I'll have to go back and listen to this, so I want to make sure we're clear about this. Garrett says that the podcast never said that Richard Fan hit any girls. It clearly said that the fight started after that with someone else and on. So someone else had hit a girl. And I just remember there was a lot of confusion there. And he says, so just to continue on, he says, the person that hit the girls was someone different than who on got into the fight with. That was crystal clear to me as I listened to it. So yeah, if that's the case, and I kind of had that memory bias or whatever when Tony said that that's what they said, I thought,
you know,
well, they must have.
I'm not disagreeing with Garrett. I remember from my listening, and I listened to it yesterday and today, I remember my listening that there was this idea that someone at the party was hitting a girl. And then there was an altercation outside. And I don't feel like, in my opinion, that they ever disconnected the two. Like, they never did say that the victim was the person. You know what I mean? They never blatantly said that the victim was the person that was hitting the girl. But I also do not remember there ever being a point where they split the two incidents.
I remember being confused. So, and I was at the gym working out while this was going on, while I was listening to it too. So and that's why I could have been distracted from it. But I remember being confused about who he was fighting, because there was like this implication that there was a fight, and then, you know, somebody hit a girl, and then on got in. I was confused about who he was fighting. But I thought, now that I'm remembering when Garrett put that in there, I feel like I remember her saying that on got into a fight with someone else out there, but I don't remember. So I should have, and I just haven't had time to do that, gone back and re-listened to it. But yeah, I remember being confused about that part.
Yeah. They never said that it was the victim was the person that was being accused of hitting any women or anything like that. But I also, like you said, I don't think that they ever made a mention that these are two separate incidents. It sounded like there was an altercation outside in a fight because someone was hitting a woman.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression that I got. Was
at least that, exactly. I mean, that is the impression I got. And Garrett says that he doesn't believe that they were smearing the victim at all. I don't think they were smearing the victim at all, but I also don't, I mean, they never really advocated for the victim either. They just kind of, it was just another character in the story.
Well, and there was an injury, and we talked a little bit about this in the podcast. So you don't know this because you haven't heard the end, but at the end of it, she had read the statement that was read by the victim's family.
Okay.
And she talks about how, you know, nobody would talk to her. So she wasn't, you know, she wanted them to have a voice in this. They didn't want to have a voice in it. They didn't want anything to do with it. That was her best way of putting it forward. But she'd also never said the victim's name, you know, which for us, and I think most people in the true crime community, that was, you know, that's like, because there's people in the chat here today that are like, yeah, but we never heard the victim's name. What's the victim's name? Was she chained some name? I think, I think this is where you have a journalist telling a story. It's not focused on true crime. They're just, because, you know, I teach journalism and journalistic ethics, and there's this weird cross section that's happening there, because like, do I share this person's name out to the world when I don't have their permission to do that? Nobody has agreed to be a part of the story. And so and there's also, you know, this is not an independent podcast producer. You know, this is being produced by Campsite and Wondery. So you kind of have in those situations, you have these overlords that are kind of, they're trying not to get sued all the time. Right. And so, you know, I don't know this to be true, but they may have said, listen, you don't have anything from that side, so we're just not going to say his name, because on paper it's like, that's the safe move. Let's not even talk about him. We're going to change some names. We're going to not say the victim's name, because nobody said, you know. So I, as a journalist, I could see that, why they've defaulted that way, but it doesn't fit with what we're used to hearing.
Correct. And my only question, I'm questioning the whole purpose or the whole idea of that, but, you know, I understand the idea of any legal ramifications that could come by mentioning people that don't want to be mentioned or that don't want to be part of it. But even a quick Google search brings up the victim's name. So it's very public. Mm-hmm. It's a very public thing, the victim's name. So is there an ethical or moral standpoint on something like that, where it is a easy search? It is something, you know, Richard Phan came up immediately when I put in their names. You know, and that wasn't hard for me to find. So it wasn't like it's a secret. I mean, is there, in your opinion, is there a moral or ethical dilemma there?
Well, there's a hard, you've got moral ethical lines, and then you have legal lines, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, because a lot of times when things, you know, that I'm doing, I have to run by my attorney, like, hey, can I say this? Should I say this? And one thing that's like, you're not responsible. Jen is not responsible for your Google search, if that makes sense, right? So
correct.
From a legal standpoint, if she's like, I'm not going to say anything about this victim because I don't want to get sued. They haven't told me anything. I don't want to get sued. So I'm just saying these two guys were, you know, they got in a fight at a party. I'm not mentioning any names. I'm not mentioning, you know, location. I'm not giving any identifying information away. These two guys got in a fight at a party. That's all I'm saying. So I'm not at risk of defaming any of these people. If you then go Google and figure out who she's talking about, then, you know, she's not responsible for that Google. Now, not doesn't mean somebody still might try to sue her. But, you know, that's a defense where you say, I never said a word about that person. You know what I mean? So there's, and again, I'm just spitballing process. And Jen is not, this is not like a true crime podcaster that I'm friends with that I know that I could shoot a quick text to. You know, this is, so it's not somebody that I can just, you know, ask. If it was Bob Motta or Susan Simpson or somebody, I can be like, hey, what's up with this? I don't have that kind of connection with her. If you're wondering why I don't just ask her, because that's not a possibility. I mean, it could be, but it would take some channels to ask that question, and they probably wouldn't want to answer it. But so I'm just kind of spitballing different ideas. So that could be part of it. Because I was very turned off by the fact that we never heard the victim's name, even all the way to the end. And so I'm just thinking through, like, why would that be? And I think that's probably because if one of my students was doing a story on this, of those going to go out to the public, I'd be like, well, you know, you don't have any statements from them. You don't have anything to verify these things. You can't fact check it because you can't talk to the people. So leave them out of it. Right.
Okay.
But then when you're, you know, you're doing a true crime podcast, people are like, no, that's not how we work over here. You know what I mean?
No, it makes perfect sense. So we are to our last question. If you have anything you want to jump in with before I read this last question, now's the time.
I think the horse is dead.
All right. So yeah. With everything we've also talked about, we have had a lot of listeners come in and who really enjoyed the Blood Will Tell podcast from its storytelling perspective. Specifically, Sue says, I thought Jen Miller was a terrific guest. I also listened to the first two episodes of her podcast, Blood Will Tell, and it hooked me. I actually want to binge all six episodes and was disappointed that there are only two available. But we do know that they are coming out weekly. Is that what we've heard?
Yeah, so they're coming out every Thursday on just your regular podcast feed. I did not know, she never mentioned this to me, that if you have an Audible subscription, she may not have known, because Wondery and Audible are connected. Wondery and Amazon are now. I think Amazon owns Wondery now. So if you have an Audible subscription, then you can actually go listen to all six episodes anytime if you want to. And I just want to wrap up with this. I mean, I feel like a lot of, I hope we've been clear about our thoughts on this, but I don't want this to come across as me being negative about the podcast or about Jen, because that would, and only because that would be disingenuous. First of all, it was one of my favorite interviews to record. I thought it was a really interesting in-depth conversation that I was able to have with Jen back and forth. I thought the interview went well. Also, as you guys heard, like, I really, really enjoyed the podcast. So, you know, I thought it was great, but I've got to, you know, put myself in the headspace that I think it was great because it was a great story. It was a really, you know, I listened to so much true crime for the podcast here that I, you know, when I'm doing these interviews, I have to listen to a lot of stuff to prepare for these interviews. I'm not super into true crime storytelling very much. And a lot of that is because I'm so, you know, I just, you know, where my standards are at with making sure that, you know, victims are being put on the forefront. And there's a lot of times where I just feel like, oh, that's not the way I would have done it. So for me, the one thing that I liked about it so much was the fact that it was very unique. I thought it was just an incredibly well-written story. But, you know, I'm looking at it as this is a story, a Shakespearean story about these two brothers, and it was an incredible story. And so I just want to make sure I put out there that you know, my opinion on it, I, you know, the knee-jerk reaction might be like, yeah, I agree. It's horrible. She did horrible things, because there's a lot of people in our audience that feel that way. And if you do feel that way, that's okay. I mean, you may be right. I don't know. But I'm not going to lie to you and say that I feel that way, because I don't. For me, I can separate this was a human interest story and the cross in the true crime space. Do I wish there was more about the victims in it? Absolutely. But that being said, you know, there very well could be reasons we're unaware of as to why that couldn't be the case. So, Zach, unless you have anything to add, we can go ahead and wrap this thing up.
No, I think that's it from me.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. And again, on Sunday, you're going to get two episodes this week. You're going to get one on Sunday and one on Monday. They will be replay episodes for some of you. It's been years and years, very relevant to the stuff we've been talking about lately. I'm sure it wasn't on this feed, so a lot of you probably haven't heard them yet. So that'll be coming. You get since I don't have time to put a main episode together this week, instead of taking the week off, I'm going to give you two for the price of zero. Check those out, and then we'll be back. If you guys like the live, we started streaming, by the way. If you're listening to this on Friday, we started streaming to the Truth and Justice Facebook page and the YouTube channel, as we always do, and the X account. And I'm going to try to get the Instagram account going. So Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time is when we usually stream. So if you guys want to join live and join the chat, we've got over 120 people in here today. So we've got a pretty good crowd. So if you're on any of those platforms or you look for us, then you can join the chat, because we'd love to be able to take some of those chat questions live and put them into the podcast. So check those out. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
It's tax season, and by now, we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's an important one you need to hear. $16 billion. That's how much money in refunds the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud. But it's not all grim news. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Here's the truth. You could literally be adored by everyone and then come home and still get completely ignored by your own cat. It's classic cat behavior. But new Shiba Premium Puree is a lickable treat that changes all that. They're protein-rich, made with bone broth, and have the smooth, creamy texture cats go crazy for, especially when it's hand-fed. Yeah, it's more than a treat. It's a fast pass to favorite human status. So feed your cat Shiba and go from totally ignored to truly adored in just 12 days, guaranteed, or your money back. Learn more at Shiba.com.